And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Caitlin McGrath. I know you're used to hearing Drew Fairservice do this introduction. He is off today, I believe. I think he's enjoying some family time or holiday time. He'll be back soon with another episode with our other co-host, Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays pitcher, former All-Star, and current all-around great dude. But this episode on Spin Rate, we have a very special guest here. He is the host of the Designated for Assignment podcast, and he also writes for The Score, and he's a good friend. Josh Goldberg joins us. Hello, Josh.
I'm surprised you didn't call me an all-around great dude. I feel, compared to Ricky, it's impossible. I'm just not on the same level. There's no denying it. But yeah, I appreciate it. We've talked so many times. Podcast, radio, you name it. So I was obviously excited to get the ask to do it. And, you know, like there's always so much to talk about, but, you know, particularly at the time of the calendar that we find ourselves, this is obviously a really good time to dive into it.
Yeah, of course. And everyone knows this is like my rookie voyage and steering the ship here on this podcast. I'm usually in the second chair, I think is what the pros in radio call it. Today, I'm in the first chair. It's like a promotion or something. So I will do the usual sort of rundown. If you aren't already, please remember to subscribe to Spin Rate on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And as Josh just alluded to, we're going to talk a lot about the trade deadline that just passed on Tuesday at 6 p.m., weirdly late time, very inconvenient for us writers, and that's what it should all be about, but I digress. So speaking of the trade deadline, you can read all of the Athletics trade deadline coverage, and there is legitimately a ton of it for just $1 a month for 6 months by visiting theathletic.com/spinrate. I hope you're a subscriber. If you're not, please check it out. Josh, let's pretty much just dive in. I think that this was, I guess if I'm trying to sort of like sum up this trade deadline for me, I think for one, it sort of dragged on a little bit. And it was because the season started later. And so the deadline was a little bit later, I guess, to align with maybe where teams are at a certain, game benchmark. But I think because our brains and our sort of body clocks or whatever, we're just kind of used to it being more at the end of July or like almost like, so it seemed to kind of drag a little bit, which I was like really ready for it to just happen, especially on Tuesday. I'm sitting there in the morning and be like, okay, things need to start happening, especially for the Blue Jays because they did all of their moves on that Tuesday. So for one, I felt the deadline sort of dragged a little bit. And then I think that it was really highlighted by some real highs, some real, real exciting moves. Obviously, probably the headliner of it was Juan Soto moving to the Padres, and the Padres just completely kind of controlling and doing what they want at will at the deadline, as they're kind of known to do at this point. But from some like real high highs, it was a bit of a weird deadline. I don't know if it was like completely underwhelming, but certainly some teams really didn't do much. I think the market in general had a handful of really enticing guys, but there wasn't a huge rental market, especially with relievers. And usually you're expecting like a ton of relievers. That's just expectation every year. Like there's millions of relievers available. That really wasn't the case this year. It felt like there was less sellers. So it really developed into a favorable market for sellers. And so you saw a lot of buyers that whether they were priced out, whether they were turned off of the pricing, whether they just thought our chances aren't good enough. I think we can get into maybe some specific teams, but that's kind of like my my general overarching thoughts on it. What about you? Like, what are you taking away from this deadline as a whole? Anything that stands out to you? Any surprises? Any highlights for you? Any lowlights for you?
Like, obviously, Soto's, it's wild to me that that actually did end up happening. You know, like, especially it was a days and even a couple of weeks, it seemed like, where the decision to not sign that extension happened. And then it was like, oh, well, is this actually going to happen? Is the team going to be able to pull this together in such a short period of time? Because you basically have to take like a whole census of your franchise to put your ducks in a row to actually feel like you can put forth a competitive offer. And San Diego, like, AJ Preller is a wild man. So like, mm-hmm. It wasn't really that surprising that that was the team that was like, yeah, we'll basically gut our entire farm system for Juan Soto. And it probably will end up being worth it, but we'll see what happens. So that was obviously exciting. Outside of that, I was a little bit, like, I don't know if I would say underwhelmed, but it wasn't as action-packed as I thought it might be. And there was so much talk about how, well, it was going to be a seller's market. And I think that that obviously really ended up coming to fruition. Like, you look at, like, the Chicago White Sox made one deal for Jake Diekman. The Guardians, who are not really an aggressive team by nature, they didn't do anything. And, you know, how much of that was, well, the prices are exorbitant. And I think, you know, the Luis Castillo trade on Friday kind of set the tone a little bit. And it was like, you know, the Jays got Jose Berríos, similar type of pitcher at a similar age with similar control left last year for two quality prospects. But, you know, Castillo, three top five prospects, couple of other players, like a really massive return. And I imagine that that probably frightened some people. And like you said, rental relievers, I expected a bunch to move and not as many as I thought were going to. Like, David Robertson goes to the Phillies for a legitimate prospect, like a decent pitching prospect for a 37-year-old rental reliever. That really raised my eyebrows a little bit. Like, the Tigers, I thought, were going to be in a position to really maybe dictate the reliever market a little bit with some guys with control. They traded Michael Fulmer, who's a rental. They didn't trade Andrew Chafin, who's a rental. Like, it was just kind of all over the place. And I think that, you know, certain teams were more prepared to be aggressive, like the Yankees and the Astros. And then there were other teams who, you know, maybe just weren't, like, it's all subjective. Like, certain teams just have different valuations of prospects and farm system than others. So, you know, it's hard to know. Sometimes beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but I definitely was surprised at the lack of reliever activity, because those are the types of deals you always expect to get done at the deadline.
Yeah, I think that I guess way before talking like mid-July, you're kind of imagining, and I remember even like putting together lists and like feeling like, oh, there's a lot of relievers available. But once it got closer and closer to the deadline, and even just talking to some of my colleagues, like, the Tigers were in Toronto last weekend, right before, and a colleague, Cody, like, we were just kind of like really dreaming up a scenario where you were going to have one of the Tigers relievers walk across the diamond or walk around the from the visitors clubhouse to the home clubhouse. Those sort of like, you know, made from movie type deadline deals. And that just didn't develop. It sounds like the Blue Jays certainly probably made calls to the Tigers, but nothing happened there. They didn't do much. A bit sort of uninspiring, because I don't know. Tigers are one of those teams where I'm like, I don't know what the vision is for you. I don't know what you guys are doing. You mentioned the Astros. I really liked their deadline. I thought they did some really smart moves addressing first base. And it sounded like, to your point, like, maybe they were a little bit like turned off by some pricing, but they were able to pivot and still accomplish a lot. Like, pivoting from maybe a Josh Bell to a Trey Mancini, I thought was really smart. And I actually really like Trey Mancini in that ballpark. I believe he hit a home run today already in his Houston debut. So, like, I really liked their moves. They got better. The Yankees were a bit curious, because they obviously, like, filled one rotation spot with Frankie Montas. And, yeah, he's got, you know, good stuff. There's probably a question mark there with the shoulder, which you and I had talked about a little bit, like, you know, how much do you want to give up for him? There's also some sort of questions about his home road splits. Maybe was sort of got used to pitching in a very friendly foul territory stadium in Oakland. How will he fare in the Yankees? And then they kind of made that curious move at the end to trade Montgomery to the Cardinals, which was a bit like, you know, I think the Yankees obviously have had a really good rotation. They've been struggling a little bit lately, but they traded away a ton of their pitching prospects and then traded their best major league pitchy depth away. So that move is curious to me. But yeah, I think that I would sort of agree with you. The White Sox and the Guardians feels like a real missed opportunity. The interesting thing too was reading James's piece from the White Sox point of view. And, you know, he talked about a source or something, someone close to the team telling him the players were disappointed, and then the GM coming out and saying, we're disappointed too. Like, we failed. We didn't get anything done. And read into it how you want. Obviously, the GM doesn't get anything done, and he's going to come with some excuses or say why we didn't get anything done. Yeah. Prices were high. They weren't able to make deals happen. I get it. But also in those situations, and maybe this is a little bit what the Blue Jays were doing, is you have to get creative. I think that's what maybe some teams, Cleveland and the White Sox, lacked a little bit, is like, yeah, they didn't maybe pivot with the market, or what was working for them in previous years wasn't working this year, and they weren't able to get anything done. Whereas the Blue Jays, I think that it's looking at what they were able to do, probably safe to assume that, yeah, like, and I wouldn't have to assume it. I remember days before the deadline, Ross Atkins, the GM, coming out and saying, like, if you're going to trade for someone now, you're paying a premium. And only a few days later, we saw Castillo go to the Mariners, and they certainly paid a premium for him. And it didn't seem like the prices came down much, honestly. Maybe at the last minute, like, the Phillies getting Syndergaard for, you know, kind of an okay modest price maybe, but Syndergaard's a rental. He's going to pitch there for 2 months, and he's not really the lights out guy that he used to be. So yeah, I guess, like, we're kind of in agreement that there was some high points to this deadline, but overall, sort of a lot of teams didn't do that much, or you're sort of like left like shrugging. The Mets didn't do a ton. I know, yeah. I don't pay as close attention to the NL in season, but I mean, the Mets are like a first place team. They're having one of the best seasons ever for their franchise, and they really didn't address very much. I wonder how much the Cubs kind of balking on not trading Contreras and not trading Ian Happ affected other teams. Certainly seems like it affected other teams. But also, again, you circle back to that point. It's like, you try to have to make something happen. You have to get creative somehow.
Well, like, yeah, the Mets not addressing their catching situation to me feels like a real misfire. And Contreras made a lot of sense. And like, I think it was Jed Hoyer of the Cubs basically said that teams weren't as aggressive this year, like, with the Cubs players. They traded everyone last year. They traded Bryant, they traded Rizzo, they traded Baez. And he said teams weren't as aggressive. And maybe that is, we can read between the lines, and we had a really high price for these guys, and teams just weren't prepared to reach that price. And that can kind of tie in to what we're talking about here, is maybe why things didn't go according to the script that a lot of us expected. And I'm more surprised because, like, I thought if the Soto trade happened, that the floodgates would open a little bit. And that was kind of like the thing that was blocking the dam. And then the floodgates would open and everything would start flowing. And that, you know, really didn't happen in the end. Like, there were impact players traded, but there weren't that many like seismic trades outside of Soto. Like, Castillo could be, absolutely. Montas could be, but there aren't that many teams that I'm looking at after yesterday and saying, oh yeah, like, this team that was a fringy type of team or playoff team firmly now is entrenched as a, you know, legit contender. To me, it was the teams that were already really good did a nice job in fortifying themselves and separating themselves from the rest of the pack. Like, the NLs were super competitive and still will be. But like, you look at the AL, it's basically been the Yankees and Astros all year. And they were the only two teams in the American League who really put their foot down or like, okay, we want to go for this. And the fringy type of teams in the rest of, I guess the Twins did a nice job, but outside of that, nobody was really aggressive in trying to make a push to put pressure on Houston and New York.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the Twins, to me, I really liked their deadline as well. They just really honed in, focused on their need pitching, which was clear. And not that they sort of like knew that this was going to happen, but they were the only sort of active team also in the Central. So their deadline looks good for what they did, but it also looks even better based on what the White Sox and the Guardians didn't do. It's interesting. Like, I looked up this story today. I just stumbled upon it on Fangraphs, and they did like who are the winners and losers based on how much they improved their playoff odds. The Blue Jays are not a winner or a loser. They are just in some middle zone because they improved at the margins, I would say, is the best way to characterize their moves. They, if I look at the number, they had really good playoff odds before the deadline. Yeah. Before the deadline, they had, according to this article at Fangraphs, 94.9% odds to make the playoffs post-deadline. So after they made their moves, they have a 95.9% chance to make the playoffs. So they improved by 1%. Other teams, like by comparison, like the Padres improved their playoff odds by 6.8%, the Twins 7.4%. That's probably a reflection both of them and then also Guardians not doing much. Interestingly, the Phillies decreased their odds, which is weird, but I guess that's probably more a reflection of what the Cardinals did and other teams did around them, as opposed to like them probably just like not doing enough.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Back to the Blue Jays, obviously, that's what we're going to focus on now. I would say just kind of reading Twitter. I don't go too much into my comments today.
I always caution against that. You never know what you're going to find.
It was piling up there in the comments. But I would say the reaction has been mixed. I think some people are disappointed, which I can understand. I think the Blue Jays honestly set a pretty high bar for themselves the last couple of junctures where teams can improve. So I'm talking about the offseason and free agency and trades also in the offseason, as well as the trade deadline. So the Blue Jays have had, for the last, I guess, three sort of junctures, they've had significant moves to their team. Last year's trade deadline, it was obviously Jose Berríos, which was a great trade for them and still looks like a great trade for them despite some of his wobbles this year. Preseason, this season, they traded for Matt Chapman, who was really a perfect fit for them, other than the fact that he doesn't hit left-handed, but he's been great. Obviously, he's been on a tear this month for them and has been excellent in the field. last offseason or two off-seasons ago. Gosh, when did George Springer? But anyway, George Springer joined the team at some point. That was a big add. Kevin Gausman in the offseason as well. So they've had a lot of sort of headline-grabbing moves. I think the fan base has honestly quite sort of gotten used to them being in the thick of things. And this year they made some sort of sensible, pragmatic, practical deadline moves. And that is honestly very like Blue Jays, very Ross Atkins. Like these moves kind of are very characteristic of how he does things. But it also went off script a little bit in the sense that the Blue Jays lately have been more of an aggressive team and more of a team. So I think a lot of people were kind of waiting for them. Like, oh, the Blue Jays are going to do something big. And they didn't do nothing. They added four players, obviously, which will get into specifics later, but they added Mitch White from the Dodgers. He's kind of a swingman, probably Ross Stripling 2.0. Yeah. Anthony Bass and Zach Pop from the Marlins. They're both relievers. And then Whit Merrifield, which was a kind of a curious move that came in right at the wire. And he's, I think, you know, he's a second baseman, but I think he's more so a utility guy, or that's how they'll use him in Toronto. So those were the moves. They're all, again, like these floor raising type of moves. What was your read on how the Blue Jays did at the deadline? Disappointing? Are you fine with it? Like, what is your general thoughts on what the Blue Jays did?
So, like, I think, you know, in these situations, you kind of have an immediate reaction and then you decompress from that a little bit. And then maybe your thoughts change or progress a little bit. Like in the moment, like 6:30 last night, I would say somewhat underwhelmed because, you know, I think it wasn't so much that I thought that the moves were bad by any means. Like they're certainly better than they were. You're right. They're pragmatic moves, practical moves. They're floor raising moves. But I just went into the deadline thinking that they had to find a way to really infuse that bullpen with just more juice. And they did. I'm not saying that they didn't. Anthony Bass has been incredible. Like slider, 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 tons of strikeouts. Not the same pitcher he was 2 years ago. Do I really believe that Anthony Bass is going to pitch to a sub-2 ERA the rest of the season? Like, no, in all honesty, I think he's given up one home run this year. Coming back to the AL East, I just don't know if I can really buy in on that. The Zach Pop thing is interesting, but the same thing. You have a lot of guys who already put the ball in play, and he's a big sinker ground ball guy. That's fine. You have good defense, but in the playoffs, weird things happen. When the ball is in play, you're bringing all sorts of outcomes into the equation. And that's just not what I want. I want as many easy outs as possible in competitive baseball down the stretch and in the postseason. And I still think that there are real question marks if there's enough electricity in that bullpen to get those kinds of easy outs. The Mitch White deal, I think that one's pretty heady. Like we'll see what Nick Frasso does or doesn't turn out to be. Like I'm not really gonna, you know, be that upset when he traded a prospect. Mitch White's, I think, a free agent in 2027 or 2028. So they have a ton of control over him. And maybe you can wring something out of him more than he's shown. I think he does have some decent stuff. So we'll see what happens there. The Merrifield thing blew my mind. Like it was the last thing I would have ever expected is that, like, if they were looking for a position player, I would have expected it to be a left-handed bat, but you know, like Ian Happ was the guy. And somebody asked me, like, why would you want Ian Happ over Whit Merrifield? Like the track record of Whit Merrifield is longer and better. And that's actually a fair point. Ian Happ's been a better player this year. Like the Merrifield, the vaccination stuff is whatever. Like we'll see what happens there. I can't imagine that the Jays made a deal without some assurance or some feeling that he was going to be available for 100% of the games if he was healthy, because it would just be bad business if they were like, yeah, well, hopefully we'll convince you if once we get you in the door, like maybe we'll be able to get it done. But like, I think that they're better than they were, like I said, but I think, you know, where I'm at is that they didn't do enough, especially in comparison to the Yankees and Astros, like we were talking about, like those teams made impactful moves, and the Jays moves could end up being impactful, but it seems like a little light, you know, considering you, I think, already had a gap to close to those teams. I feel like those teams even more so took a step away from you as opposed to your moves kind of inching closer to them. So like in that sense, I would say it's underwhelming, but like my initial reaction was very disappointed, but now I'm like, they're decent moves, but I was left wanting more, I would say, in the end.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. Like, I think in a vacuum, you look at it and you're all like, these are good practical moves. Really interesting that I think all of the moves, all the moves come with control. Yeah. Anthony Bass is a, you don't have to extend that control. It's an option year for $3 million and I think a buyout for $1 million. So the Blue Jays can let him be a free agent at the end of the year, but they have the option to bring him back. And the Whit Merrifield has is signed through next year and then has a crazy high $18 million option, mutual option that won't be picked up, but that's the year after. And then the two other pitchers have a ton of control left. They're both young, sort of beginnings of their career. So in a vacuum, the moves all satisfy some needs this year. They look good that you didn't spend a ton and you get control next year. The biggest name prospect going out was Jordan Groshans, who went to the Marlins for the pair of relievers. He, ahead of the season, was in their top five prospects, but he's had a bit of a underwhelming season in AAA. He's still quite young for AAA, so you have to keep that in mind. But the questions of his power have been sort of lingering for a couple years now. There was questions about it last year. I think he only has one home run this year. It's a decent pickup for the Marlins if he turns into something. They need offense. So, you understand why that goes that way. But I think that was a good, all fine moves by the Blue Jays. But I would agree, in comparison to what the other teams did, I sort of understand why fans would feel a bit disappointed. I understand also, given the context of what the Jays have done in the past, why they would feel disappointed. But to me, this felt like a very, Ross Atkinsy deadline where maybe in a few years we're looking at Mitch White, yeah, just in the same way they were kind of looking at Ross Stripling now, 2 years ago when they traded for him, 2020. That trade similarly kind of came out of nowhere, where the Dodgers just have all these extra starters and they just can move them because they just don't have enough room for their 10 starters that they have. Yeah. And so the Blue Jays kind of went to that well again. And I was saying this all along, the Blue Jays love repeat moves or going to the same well. It's why I predicted that they would get Anthony Bass. I just had this feeling he satisfies some of their bullpen needs. He's not a huge freak, throws 100 with a nasty slider necessarily. I mean, his slider is very good pitch, but he doesn't throw 100. He throws mid 90s. He was good for them in 2020. He walked too many guys, but he was serviceable for them. And he's only gotten better since, obviously making adjustments. But yeah, it's the difference between it being a really impactful deadline and what they did, which is sort of just fine. I think honestly would have just been one extra move. And that's probably a sort of lights out reliever. So if they were able to pry a Jimenez or a Gregory Soto from the Tigers, it's a completely different conversation. Then we're saying, you know what? The Blue Jays raised their floor and they raised their ceiling of the bullpen. So they were, and you can say this about any team, right? We could also be insane, well, the Guardians were one move away from having a great deadline. So the fact is they didn't do it. They didn't get it done. So as much as the Blue Jays did some things, they did some things to help. It wasn't an A-plus deadline. I think Joe Bowden did some grades. I think he gave the Blue Jays a B-ish or something, somewhere in the B range. I think I'd agree with that probably, because given how many teams didn't do anything, I think you have to give the Blue Jays credit for doing some things and getting creative a little bit, and looking like the team that at least didn't really rely on rentals, which can sometimes bite you a little bit.
For sure.
That's honestly, look at the Blue Jays last year. Their two rental relievers they got, Soria and Hand, did absolutely nothing for them. And it was the controllable guys, Adam Simber and Trevor Richards, that were good for them and have been more so Simber this year, but have been helpful this year. So I think that's also to keep in mind. Sometimes we look at these rentals and say, David Robertson would have really helped, but sometimes it doesn't. And I'm sort of not, I'm of the mind of David Robertson was also pitching in the NL Central, which is a weaker division than the AL East, to say the least. And I'm not sure his stuff looks completely the same if he's going back to the AL East. So that's kind of where I'm falling. It's I understand where the disappointment is, but I also think, it's not like anyone else got Gregory Soto. The Tigers really didn't seem that open to moving guys or whatever reason. no one other than the Yankees and the Astros, like, they did a lot, but, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of like, I'm fine with the Jays moves. I sort of settle on, they're fine.
Yeah. Like, I think that it's right. They're fine. Like, it's hard to know what the price tag was for like a Jimenez or a Soto. I assume really high that they didn't move. And like, you know, trading legitimate top end prospects for relievers, even ones with control, that's a, you know, treacherous path to take. Like, I don't think that, even though on some list, Jordan Groshans is still relatively highly touted and highly ranked, like, I think that the bloom has fallen off the rose a little bit there, especially within the Blue Jays organization. Like, it's certainly possible, like you said, he's young enough still that he's not necessarily nearing the end of his developmental clock. Like, he could find another level, but you just look organizationally, where was Jordan Groshans going to play for this club? Like, you know, whether Matt Chapman's here in the long run or not, like, Aurelvis Martinez is probably going to be playing third base before too long for the Blue Jays. He's definitely ahead of, or was ahead of Groshans. You know, Bo Bichette is, I think, another three seasons before free agency at shortstop. So, like, I know Groshans has played some first base, some DH while Vladdy's at first base. Like, there's just wasn't a pathway. So you could say, well, and this was my initial reaction was, hey, he's a top five prospect. You're just getting two relievers for him. And then afterwards, it was just like, well, yeah, he has one home run at AAA this year. You know, there's concerns about his power production at a corner infield or shortstop spot. Is that really, can he really be a quality major leaguer without that power? So then you think about it, and it's like, you know what, they probably did pretty well. And it seems like a lot of, you know, people within the game were pretty glowing on the return that the Jays got in that deal. So, like, as far as that trade goes and the White deal, like, I like the return, the Jays really didn't give up that much. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think any of the assets, like Samad Taylor, Max Castillo had some moments, no question. We'll see what happens, you know, day on the road, if he can turn into something. You know, Samad Taylor also has shown some promise in the minors, but like, you're not really lamenting the loss there of any of those guys. Like, I don't think your system is super depleted. And like you said, you added control. You know, I think like some people have some questions about the depth starting pitching wise. I don't really think you're in that much of a worse position than you were. Like, Mitch White, when all is going to according to plan, just takes the Max Castillo role, and he's more proven than Max Castillo, and I think better than Max Castillo. So, you know, you're coming out sort of ahead in that swap. The Stripling injury sort of throws a fly in the ointment now, because now Mitch White, I think, is basically going to be pressed into duty as soon as possible. You know, like, I just don't know what necessarily people expected. Like, were you expecting them to get two new pieces of the rotation that were going to push Kikuchi and Stripling out? Like, that's a hard thing to get done and realistically accomplish. Like, the Jays invested in Kikuchi. They were going to do everything that they possibly could to get him right. And Stripling's been really good, so they weren't going to look to shove him out of the rotation unless something really great materialized. And it sounds like they tried on Montas. Like, they were in on him. It didn't work out. Like, you know, you can definitely lament that if you want. But like, I thought, as far as, you know, the starting pitching situation, like, I'm not really beating up on them the same way that a lot of people were. Like, I thought that I'd much rather Mitch White than Noah Syndergaard. Like, to me, it's not even close. Noah Syndergaard's just a name brand at this point. You look at those two, you put them side by side in 2022, Mitch White, I think, is a more valuable asset. And, you know, maybe you paid a little bit more for the control of White as opposed to rental in Syndergaard, but like, I'd still rather him probably the rest of the season. And I like, sometimes people just like the sticker shock of, well, you didn't get Noah Syndergaard, you got this guy I've never heard of, you failed. I wanted the guy I actually know as opposed to the guy I don't know. So
yeah.
I think Mitch White is actually somebody who could end up really paying some dividends, you know, maybe more so down the line than this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has impactful moments here down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw someone tweeting at you, but at me, because somehow, I don't know, I think you had replied to me, and it was like now the Jays had done something or whatever, and then the person was like, now they have to trade for someone where you would buy the jersey of, and it's like, yes, that's not really how it works, honestly. And if you're talking about the Jays jersey sales, it's like, 95% Vlad and then the rest. Most people are just buying a Vlad jersey. That's the smart investment because he'll be around a long time probably. But so, yeah, I would agree with, yeah, the starting pitching thing is interesting because I honestly was earlier in the season or even last month, I was more on the sort of getting concerned about the starting pitching depth, especially. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I sort of understand how you view the trade deadline and their need for starting pitching as more of a luxury as opposed to a serious need. And I think Mitch White is kind of that like luxury get where it's like, now you've got a guy that you is controllable. He obviously has good staff. He comes from the Dodgers organization. They certainly know how to develop pitchers. You have a guy that can swoop in and just take that Ross Stripling role this year, but also next year when Ross Stripling is going to be a free agent and might not be back with you guys. So you've just acquired who's going to be your next Ross Stripling. And potentially he can be Ross Stripling with also Ross Stripling if he comes back, but you just kind of cover your bases there a little bit. So he will be pressed into duty probably very soon. So I actually wrote this today. It's up right now. And when you're listening to this, it'll be up and probably filled with comments. But I wrote basically that the Blue Jays additions are essentially going to be pressed into duty right away. The relievers, certainly Anthony Bass, take the eighth inning for us. We need you. And Zach Pop as well, not the eighth inning, but they're going to be pressed into duty. Relievers, that's just how it works.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whit Merrifield, interesting acquisition because the Blue Jays, I think, like him for his versatility. And the Blue Jays, over the last couple of years, they're one of their MOs is collecting guys with versatility and having as many of those guys on their roster, athletic guys, guys that can play different positions, guys that can have different skills at the plate. So other than being left-handed, which would have been ideal, they did not get that. It's not a deal breaker for me that they didn't get a left-handed bat. I certainly would have put that below starting pitching in terms of a need, because as much as they would like the lineup balance, it's weird because this team hits right-handed hitters, hits right-handed pitchers really well. They don't hit left-handed, so it's like, but they're all like a right-handed lineup, so it's kind of a weird situation where it's like, it would look nice. Their lineup would look nicer with more balance, but they're getting the results they need against right-handed pitching. They're probably one of the best hitting teams against right-handers right now. They're best, one of the best hitting teams in general. So Whit Merrifield is interesting to add because he does things a little differently. More of a contact hitter, more of a speedy guy, Even though he's in his getting, I think, 33 now, but he's still got the speed. He plays a lot of different positions in the infield. Second base, I think, has been one of his primary positions, but he can play all over the infield and the outfield. He's played center field, not a ton, but I looked it up today, 76 games over his career. He's played center field. I asked our Royals reliever, Royals writer, Alec Lewis, just like, can he play center field? And he said, yeah, like he can play center field. He's not going to be a gold glove center fielder, obviously, but he can do it. So I think looking at what's happening with the Blue Jays, obviously Ross Stripling going on the IL. So as you said, Mitch White going to be pressed into duty right away. Whit Merrifield might also similarly be pressed into duty right away, maybe covering some center field for George Springer, who's battling that right elbow soreness, injury, inflammation, whatever you want to call it. But here's the rub with Whit Merrifield. When can he play in Toronto? Can he play in Toronto? That's the big question. We obviously don't know, kind of understand why Ross is not saying too much, because privacy, you want Whit Merrifield be able to talk about it himself, but obviously the Blue Jays have sort of almost essentially no commented on the vaccination status. So just to recap, people, that we know that Whit Merrifield is not vaccinated, because when the Royals came to Toronto last month, he was one of the many players, 10 of them, who didn't come to Toronto. So, and then he kind of got a lot of attention for some comments that he made. I'm paraphrasing here, but as it said, it was essentially like he didn't get vaccinated. And if it was between him and a chance at the postseason, or if, you know, he was traded to a team and they needed to play in Canada in the postseason, he'd consider getting the vaccine. Yeah. But so essentially, like, the Royals aren't competing right now. I don't need it, but if I have to get it, I'll be willing to get it. He took a lot of heat for that. He came out the next day and clarified it, kind of apologized for it. So obviously it's still a question, will he get vaccinated? I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier. We have to, and the Blue Jays are a pretty savvy front office. I think they would have done their due diligence. I think they would have asked around. They would have found out whether he's willing to get it. I don't think they traded for someone who's not going to be able to play half the games. I also think that looking at Whit Merrifield's situation, there's incentive for him to do it beyond just being a player. He would sacrifice like half of his salary, yeah, if he wasn't playing half the games. So there is incentive for him to do it. Based on his comments, it sounds like he would be willing to do it if it was between him and playing the playoffs. So we're going to hear from him, or the media are going to hear. I'm going to be in Minneapolis tomorrow with the team. Presumably all the players are going to be there. We're going to hear from him. So we'll probably get an answer. We don't have to speculate about this for that much longer. Honestly, when some of you guys were listening to this podcast, whenever you listen to it, we'll probably know. It's safe to assume, I think, the answer is he'll get it, but there's still a waiting period. He would have to be like 14 days, I think, post like a first shot or a second shot, like just to be fully vaccinated. So we'll kind of find out the timeline. He's going to miss some home games, assuming that he hasn't got the vaccine already, which I don't know. Maybe he has, but we'll see. But how does that, like, I mean, I don't know that we have to talk about that very much, other than it kind of surprised people because we went into the deadline assuming like the Jays aren't going to trade for any unvaccinated players. And then at the last minute, they traded for one very well-known unvaccinated player.
Yeah, like that was why I was blown away, as much as the lack of a seamless on-field fit, I think, is also a factor. Like, he's not somebody that you looked at and was like, oh yeah, this, even if he's been bad this year. Like, he's had a good month of July and has been better and has been an above average offensive player, has been making more contact. But like through the end of May, he was hitting like, I think all of his average on base and slugging were under 200. It was a disaster for a while, but yeah, like it's very interesting that they went that route with an unvaccinated player. And like, we will be very, very curious to hear what he has to say, like what sort of comments there are. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if anything was said. Like, he's already gotten it, he's going to get it, he's still thinking about it. Like, to me, it's all on the table. After he made the comments, I think the Royals GM, Dayton Moore, said he was disgusted by the comments, and rightfully so. Like, that's a pretty rough look to your teammates and to your fan base, that you basically don't care about the actual team because they're bad, and you're not going to, you know, do something that you're not comfortable with because the team's not good enough, I can understand taking a beating for that. But if he starts playing better, there's a lot to like. Like, the guy's made two All-Stars. It's been an above average defensive player essentially every year of his career, but one. Like, you know, I was looking at his Baseball Savant page. Like, in terms of outs above average, he's been in the 80th percentile or above, like I said, basically every year. It's hard to parse through, like, is it mostly second base? How much of that is outfield? I think he can be a decent outfielder. Honestly, like, the Springer's thing is such a wild card because, like, if Springer's healthy, I kind of, you know, I might take a beating for this. I would prefer to play Whit Merrifield, especially against right-hand pitching, over Santiago Espinal. Like, Espinal has been bad against righties and has basically been bad, period, since like June. He's really struggling, and he was a great story, but I'd probably take Whit. I'd bet on Whit Merrifield producing more than Santiago Espinal. And I think, you know, defensively, it's a toss-up. Like, you could maybe even argue that Merrifield might be a notch above Espinal, even though he's great at second base. So if Springer's healthy, that's an interesting conversation at second base. But if Springer's missing time, I'd rather have Whit Merrifield patrolling center field than Tapia. Like, I know Tapia has become the roller coaster of DFA this guy on May 1st to now. He's like, oh, he's a perfect fourth outfielder. I love this guy. He hustles, you know, he makes contact. He's perfect. You know, Randall who? But now, like, he's overexposed as a center fielder. Like, he's just, that's just not his sweet spot. Like, he's fine in a corner. I can live with it, especially left, right. Even I'm okay. It's more palatable. I just don't want him as my primary center fielder if Springer's not playing. And I think, you know, Merrifield will be the guy if Springer has to miss some time. But the vaccination status, like you said, like, if Springer gets put on the IL and misses the next 2 weeks or whatever it is, like, Merrifield's going to, I know you've got a 9-game road trip. You've got 7 more games. Like, whatever his dosage or series of vaccines he gets, he's either missing 2 weeks or 3.
Yeah.
So he's like, I think, you know, he could debut at home at the end of August type thing, but he's missing the next homestand. I think it's the Angels and the Guardians or something like that. He's missing those series. So, like, it's not a seamless fit really in any respect, but if all goes according to script in terms of vaccination and performance, he could actually end up being a very valuable tool because he makes contact. And, you know, the Jays, they're not a super high strikeout team, but some guys, you know, are prone to it. And especially if you fancy yourself a playoff team, like Whit Merrifield, if he's firing on all cylinders, is the type of player who can make a difference in the postseason, I think.
Yeah. And I think there's probably an impact just adding a different, like, look to your lineup, a different type of bat, like, that pitchers have to think about a little more how to pitch to him. Even thinking about their game today where they only mustered 4 hits against Yarbrough, who is their kryptonite, and the Rays' best relievers. The Rays aren't, the bullpen isn't as lethal as it has been in years past, but they do have a handful that are good. So if they have a lead or it's a close game, they can keep it close. It's, you know, so they can still do that. And just watching the Blue Jays today, you sort of wonder, what would a Merrifield do in this lineup on a game like today? Could he kind of get things going with a couple, like, hits here and there and making some noise on the bases? I also think it's really interesting that we all know that John Schneider has come along and been a lot more aggressive on the base pass and been more willing to steal bases and take the extra base and hit and runs. And then the Blue Jays go out and get a guy that's kind of known for to be speedy on the base pass. I think that, I wonder if there's some influence there. John Schneider was like, hey, have you guys wondered about Merrifield? Obviously, I don't know, but the Blue Jays are a very collaborative bunch. The front office talks to the coaching staff and vice versa. So I would bet that the Blue Jays front office asked John Schneider's input or sort of thought maybe this type of move will mesh with the sort of team that we're aiming for. And I think it's good because the Blue Jays, they are embracing the John Schneider style, but they don't have enough fast runners. And so sometimes they just, you know, don't get the job done on the bases. But it's fun to watch, and Merrifield will give them that type of guy that I think will cause the kind of chaos on the base pass that they are looking to do, which gives their team another – the Blue Jays are always a good team, and I think they play better when there is a bit of chaos amongst them. And like, some of the most entertaining games are when they're a bit, you know, doing things out of the ordinary or driving the other team a little mad, so to speak. And so I think he's a nice add in that way. And he does things a little differently. Like you said, the Blue Jays don't strike out a ton, but they do lean more power hitters a little bit. So he adds a different look, and a different look that you can slot in that utility role, because you have Cavan, but he's a completely different hitter as well. Obviously more of a walk guy, on-base guy, but on-base guy differently than Whit Merrifield. So the more I've like sat with it, the more I've kind of understood the deal a little bit. And I think that once we clear up the vaccination status, whenever that is, it'll become even more clear. And I do think he has a chance to be like sneaky good for them. And I wonder just sort of like reading in between the lines, maybe inferring too much in this, but the Royals have been bad for a long time, and I wonder if a change of scenery will spark them a little bit, coming to a team that is competitive and is in the wild card race and is looking to make the postseason. It's obviously been a while since Whit Merrifield has played on a competitive team, so that could also be a spark. You just kind of wonder, like, did he come into the season sort of like, I don't want to say unmotivated because I don't know him at all, and I wouldn't say that about an athlete, but you just sort of have to wonder year after year after year playing for the Royals that just aren't being a competitive team, and you're a guy that has been rumored to be traded year after year and you never do get traded at the deadline. Like, you just kind of wonder, was that weighing on him this year? So maybe like he is a change of scenery like candidate type, where he comes to Toronto, he kind of is surrounded in a lineup that's a lot different than what he was surrounded with in the Royals lineup, obviously a lot more powerful hitters. And maybe he doesn't feel any kind of like pressure to be the guy in Toronto. He's just another guy in their lineup. And maybe that sparks him a little bit too.
Yeah, I think so. And there's a possibility, like probability, I would say he's going to be batting, I would think, in the bottom portion of the lineup, like somewhere between 7 and 9. Like the meat of the Blue Jays lineup is pretty entrenched. Like, you know, Espinal, Jansen, if they're in, are usually 8, 9, and I imagine, you know, Merrifield will probably bat there. And that's the type of guy who, you know, can get on base and wreak havoc and turn the lineup over. Mm-hmm. And then you're in a position where, you know, knock on wood, George Springer's up with potentially a man in scoring position if all goes according to plan. And then you can have these kinds of innings where the bottom of the order really sets the table in some ways for the top of the order. Like, you think back to, I normally don't like to do this, but you think back to 2015, that happened a lot down the stretch. Like, you know, certain guys, Ryan Goins was having just an out of body experience for a couple months, but he was turning the lineup over, and then the big guys were driving them in, and that's why they were scoring so many runs. And, you know, like, another thing I've been thinking about, like, as far as the deadline goes, like, if your big horses start playing that are already here, consistently start playing a little bit better, that can boost you as well. Like, you know, Vladdy has found it. I think he's on a 14 game hitting streak. He's been better. Like, Bo Bichette has certainly been struggling of late. Like, if he can find it, and then your additions that you brought in externally also provide some impact, then I think you can, you know, maybe have a higher ceiling than perhaps we're seeing right now. Like, a lot of people envision that the Blue Jays can put it all together, and when they are at their best, they're as good as any team, arguably, in baseball. We've only seen that in like flashes, I would say, this year. It hasn't been consistent. It's been more sporadic, but I think that that's what a lot of people are hoping, is that just, you know, the guys who are already here that maybe haven't had the seasons that fans expected, or I'm sure they themselves internally have expected, start to replicate that form that we saw last year. And then your deadline acquisitions come in and, you know, provide you that shot in the arm. I did not mean to say that, just a coincidence. And then you can be the team that, you know, you want to be, and fans, you know, want you to be here over the next couple months.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that was like sort of the overarching point I tried to make in what I wrote after the deadline, was that this was also a signal from the front office that we believe in this core, and this core has to get it done. We've given you some complimentary pieces here, but we've already stacked this team up with a really good lineup and a really good pitching staff this is the time to get it done. We believe in you. We've given you some reinforcements, but the players on the roster have to get it done. And so that was kind of the sentiment I was getting from Ross a little bit, is like, we're excited to add to this, to what we think is already a really exciting core. So moving off from the deadline a little bit, I think we've both kind of set our pieces on it. And we're going to have another episode of Spin Rate this week coming out with Ricky and Drew weighing in on their thoughts on the Blue Jays and what other teams in and around the Blue Jays did. So you'll get more of their thoughts on the deadline. But I'm here in Tampa still. I fly out to Minneapolis tomorrow. The Blue Jays just wrapped up a really quick two-game series in Tampa. They split it. You'll take that at the Trop, I think.
Yeah.
It was, honestly, like, there's days when you go to the ballpark and you're really, really in tune with what's happening in the game. And there's days where you didn't realize that Kevin Gausman was throwing a no-hitter until it apparently didn't happen. Apologies to Kevin Gausman. He pitched really well, but we were a bit distracted as writers on Tuesday. But I think there's a lot of positives from that game. Again, Gausman looking great against a team that I think he kind of matches up well against, because the Rays swing a lot. They're prone to chasing a lot. You got enough hits in that. You got a little bit lucky there in the ninth inning. Jordan Romano, AL reliever of the month. I didn't realize how great his month was. And then I looked at that.
Really good. Like, yeah.
Really good. Yeah. And then today was a bit of a dud game. I don't know that you, it's Yarbrough. I don't know what you can say. Obviously Teoscar gets to him, but the rest of the team, they just can't figure him out. Kikuchi, you wish that he did a little more. I think the thing with Kikuchi is just having these innings where things derail a little bit. First inning, second inning, he's kind of cruising. And then the third, it kind of goes off and takes him a while to get the control and the command back, and give him credit for getting out of it. Give him credit for not or for limiting damage, I should say. And that's kind of what he said after the game. But you do hope that he can kind of build off this, because you want to take those five inning starts and hope that he can get to six innings, whereas this one he only went 474-ish pitches or something like that. So you're really looking for more efficiency from him and more effectiveness, because he's got the stuff.
He for sure has. You look what happened the first two innings, he was dominant, and it was just like, oh, what's going on here? He's building off of, you know, like, that was why the start against the Tigers, you had to take that with a grain of salt, because the Tigers are one of, if not the worst offensive teams in the league. It was encouraging that he had more command and he was throwing more first pitch strikes, but like you said, there's just no predictability with him, no consistency, sometimes batter to batter or even in the same at bat, but certainly not inning to inning. We saw that sort of unfold a little bit in his start against the Rays. And that, like, if you want to criticize a little bit, you could say, well, you know, why is this front office still, you know, putting faith in Kikuchi with the way that he's pitched? And I can kind of understand that, but like, I was thinking about this, like, would you rather Jose Quintana or Yusei Kikuchi? And like, you know, maybe Quintana's more dependable for a five and dive. Like, maybe he can give you five and a third, five and two thirds. But I'd rather, you know, see if Kikuchi can find it, because his upside, his stuff is just will blow Quintana out of the water. And like, am I parting with legitimate assets for a rental and a not particularly exciting rental? Like, the options just weren't that great. And you know, like, it would just be sort of doing something to do something. And they clearly believe that Kikuchi can figure it out. And I've seen enough good stuff here over the last two starts that leaves me feeling at least somewhat encouraged. It's not sustainable. Like, they have to find a way to get him deeper into games. Like, you just can't have four inning starts once a week. Maybe you can, but you don't want that to be something that it's just like, well, every fifth day, our bullpen's just got to be ready to go, because this guy's only going to be able to give us, you know, 12 to 15 outs, because you never know what can happen. Somebody the night before can, you know, get injured or have a bad start, and then your bullpen's already taxed, and then you're relying on him to give you six innings to save the bullpen. Like, he's just got to pitch better. You can't have that mindset, you know, in your brain. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least a little bit intrigued and encouraged by what I've seen from him over the last two starts. Like, he's got to put it together a little bit more, and it can't just be, you know, a fleeting inning here or two or whatever it is. It's got to be five or six. but there are definitely some building blocks that I think you should feel, you know, cautiously optimistic about is the best way I would put it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And maybe down the road, you do pair someone like Mitch White with a Kikuchi, right? And if you're just getting five from him, but if you can get two innings from Mitch White, and then you're asking a little bit less from your main bullpen guys in those instances, obviously it's not going to happen right away because Mitch White probably is going to slot into the Stripling rotation spot for the time being. But it doesn't seem like Stripling's injury is like long term. So looking ahead, the Blue Jays are going to Minneapolis for 4-game series. In Minneapolis, the Twins are a lot better team now than when the Blue Jays saw them earlier. And they were a good team when the Blue Jays saw them earlier, at least a good hitting team. That's going to be an interesting series for me. I mean, it's on the road. 4-game series are really tough.
I think
like if you're the Blue Jays, like you're looking to split. If you split, you're feeling good. I think because the Twins are probably riding the high right now. They've been a little bit inconsistent lately, I think primarily because of their lack of pitching or consistent pitching. Like they were a couple of days ago, they were using Aaron Sanchez as a starter, and then they immediately DFA'd him because of the moves they were making. But yeah, that Twins team, it's a sneaky good team.
Oh yeah, like there's a lot of talent there. Like I was not. Like a week ago, if you had asked me, I would have said, you know what, I don't think that there's going to be enough here for them to hang on to win the division. Like the White Sox or maybe the Guardians would overtake them because they were kind of leaking oil a little bit. But, you know, credit to them, they went out and made moves where they needed to make them. Like their lineup is good. When everyone's healthy, they have a lot of guys in that lineup who can hit. Like if the Jays don't pitch this weekend, Minnesota's capable of putting up some crooked numbers, but like the bullpen in particular was bad. And there are a lot of holes there, and they get Lopez and they get Fulmer. So those are two proven options in leverage spots. Like Lopez will probably close for them. And then they get Tyler Mahle from Cincinnati, who like isn't a spectacular starting pitcher, but is solid. And I imagine will line up to make a start in the series. And yeah, like he's a little homer prone, so maybe the Blue Jays, you know, will be able to take advantage a little bit. Like their rotation to me still, like you're still starting Dylan Bundy and Chris Archer. Like there's some question marks there. Like Joe Ryan, I don't know if he's like he's maybe running out of gas a little bit. He hasn't been as good as he was early in the season, but it's still, you know, a team to take seriously. Like if you're not at your best, like it could be a difficult weekend. Like, you know, you don't want to draw parallels to what happened in Seattle because it's a completely different team, but like the Jays are a completely different team than they were back then. But you just, you know, if you're lackadaisical in any way, like Minnesota is more than capable of taking advantage. So it is going to be like, this is, you know, this Rays series on the Jays are in a nice little test of like, in the 15 to 20 game range in August here, where they're going to be playing a lot of tough teams. And, you know, now you can say to yourself, like, how do we stack up? We got our season back on track against, you know, some also rans, you know, Kansas City, some teams that had some vaccination issues. The Red Sox were in a spiral, but like the Jays have some swagger and some confidence back. Now you got to have to find a way to, you know, kind of carry that forward against some stronger competition. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, what I always look to for the Jays to know whether they're going good, and they were like this earlier in the season when they were also on a bit of a run, I think in like June, is when they don't lose consecutive games. Like they had a period early on or earlier in the season where they went, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, they went a significant amount of time without losing consecutive games. And that's always a really good sign as a good team, is they don't let the losses like linger or prolong or, you know, stack up on top of each other. They just kind of flip it. And so that's what I'll kind of look to. Can they get off the right foot with, and maybe it does have some impact having a bunch of new teammates come in and meeting them and seeing them in the lineup and have, you know, that kind of thing can spark a team a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, you talk about Seattle, like that would be an absolute disaster. Obviously, the Blue Jays don't want that to happen again, which is why I say split would be really nice. You obviously hope for maybe a series win if you're the Blue Jays, but I think if you walk away with a split, you're feeling good. Just to sort of wrap up this episode, it feels like a little dated at this point because so much has happened, but last week, I guess it was last week, I have no concept of time, but the Blue Jays announced some pretty exciting changes to the Rogers Center. They are doing pretty significant renovations. They're not exactly blowing the building up, but they are adding a lot of cool features. They're changing basically almost all the seating sections in two stages. They're going to focus basically on the outfield section, and then they'll move to the lower bowl, I think, in the following phase, which will be the following season. So adding raised bullpens, bringing the seats closer to the field, so there's not going to be that gap that exists right now where, I guess, above the outfield wall, but between the seating. You're going to have porches or whatever you want to call them, patios in the 500 section that look really cool. Just kind of briefly, what was your take on those changes? You're a Toronto-born guy. You've probably been to the Rogers Center a million times, like me. You probably have fond memories of being there. What is your take on the new changes?
I like them, honestly. Like, you know, people are so jaded about stuff like this that, you know, just like you can get swept up in negativity where it's like, oh, well, you know, it's still a concrete slab and it's still a dump and all this. And like, you know, short of building a new ballpark, the issues are going to be the issues, but like, it's going to be real difficult to get that accomplished in downtown Toronto. Like, how many people are just be like, here's a plot of land for you to build a monstrosity in downtown Toronto. Like, it's going to be tough. So if they can get that accomplished, that will be one of the crown jewels of Mark Shapiro's career. Like, if he can get a stadium, new stadium built in downtown Toronto, I'll tip my cap. But in the interim, like if it's 10 to 15 years before that happens, they had to find a way to just improve the experience. Because like, I'll say I am like, when I go to a game, I'm excited to sit in my seat on my butt and watch the game. And like, yeah, you have a beer or two, like you go up a couple times at most, but I'm basically there to enjoy the experience. Like I think more in the minority in that sense. Like a lot of people are going to maybe one or two games a year. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'll watch a bit, but I want to schmooze it up. I want to walk around. I want to check some stuff out. I want to have, you know, like an atmosphere, an experience. And there's just, that's non-existent right now. Like outside of the flight deck, there's not really much going on. Like there's just not any congregation spots where you can be like, oh, I'm sitting in this section. Some buddies of mine are sitting in another section. Let's meet up in this inning and, you know, like hang out in this spot for, you know, an inning or two. That doesn't really exist right now, like I said, outside of the flight deck. So like, that stuff is great. You know, having more just kind of casual spots to watch the game and hang out, I think is important because that caters to a big sect of people. Raising the bullpens and bringing the fans closer, no brainer. Like right now, it just feels like kind of, you know, cold. I it's just not the baseball experience that I think a lot of people have. People want, who are sitting in the outfield, want to be able to, you know, catch a home run and be right on top of the bullpen and see those guys throwing and, you know, hopefully respectfully heckle or get on the opposition or cheer their favorite players in the bullpen. So having that, I think, which Mark Shapiro alluded to, was, you know, something that I think that they prioritized. That was also something that I thought was a real smart decision. And like, I'm just honestly very curious what it's actually going to look like in its physical form, because like those renderings are great and cool and all of that. But I'm just like, and I'm sure you are, and so many people that have been going to games and been in that stadium too many times to count. It's just like, it's the only thing I know. So for it to look radically different is going to be hard for me to like calibrate my brain. It's going to take some adjusting that the Rogers Center is going to look like discernibly different than it has for the lion's share of my life.
Yeah, no. And I think that was the thing that stood out to me when I was listening to Mark Shapiro, is they really want to make the Rogers Center a space where both baseball fans, but non-baseball fans can go and have a good time and enjoy the experience. And right now the experience is really just focused on watching the baseball game. And honestly, some of the seats aren't even very good for watching the baseball game because they don't face the action on the field. And so I think making the Rogers Center more of like almost a prime entertainment experience, not just like a baseball stadium. That's really going to be key to these renovations. I'm excited to see them. I've been down to Dunedin to see how the new stadium looks there and also the player development complex. And it's the same architectural company that is going to be overseeing the design team. So I'm optimistic that they'll look good because what I've seen down in Dunedin was really great, really spectacular, didn't disappoint. Along with those renovations with the Rogers Center that the fans will enjoy, the players are also going to get upgraded clubhouse and amenities and all this different thing. So it's really exciting. This episode was really exciting. I'm very glad that Josh was here to join us. I hope that I steered the ship well enough through navigating the waters through this underwhelming trade deadline.
You did great. This was great. Lots of fun.
Well, we'll invite you back when Drew is on. We always enjoy having you on the show. If you're not already listen to Josh's podcast. Josh, do you have anything to plug or what do you want to plug?
Yeah, you can listen to the Designated for Assignment podcast, wherever you get it. Myself and Rob Wong every week, breaking down the biggest storylines around the team, you know, taking your questions, getting after it like we always have. It's been a lot of fun. This is our first season doing it. Good to be still having an outlet to talk about the Jays. You can find me on Twitter at JGoldberg12. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have already found me. I tweet a lot. I like to mix it up and interact with everyone. So you can find me there too.
Great. So obviously everyone follow Josh, tweet at him. He'll respond to you. I know he responds to a lot of his tweets. So thank you everyone for listening. Drew and Ricky will be back soon with another episode. Then you'll hear me, I guess, on Monday for another episode. So for Josh and for me, thank you for listening and we'll talk to you again soon.